What if I told you that the quality of your sex life might have less to do with chemistry and more to do with your paycheck? In 2017, an explosive op-ed claimed that women had better sex under socialism, igniting a firestorm of debate that refused to die down. The assertion seemed absurd to some, revelatory to others. Yet beneath the provocative headline lay a serious question. How do economic systems shape our most intimate moments? When we think about capitalism versus socialism, we imagine factories and welfare programs, not bedrooms and desire. But what happens between two people behind closed doors is never entirely private. It's shaped by who has money, who has power, and who depends on whom for survival. This isn't just about politics or economics. It's about whether your relationship is a partnership or a transaction, whether you stay because you want to or because you can't afford to leave. Capitalism depends on a massive invisible subsidy, women's unpaid labor. Cooking, cleaning, childcare, elder care, this workforce keeps society functioning without compensation. Valued at market rates, this labor would add $39 trillion annually to the global economy. Yet because it happens in homes rather than offices, we treat it as worthless. When governments slash social services, care needs don't disappear. They transfer to families, meaning women. 3/4 of unpaid caregiving falls on women's shoulders. When childcare costs consume an entire paycheck, mothers leave the workforce 3 times more often than fathers. This isn't personal choice, it's structural design. Cold War competition created unexpected benefits. When the Soviet Union sent Valentina Tereshkova into space, America scrambled to prove its gender equality. Socialist countries pioneered universal childcare and paid maternity leave decades before Western nations. Then the Berlin Wall fell. Without socialist rivals to outperform, Western countries rolled back social programs. Newly capitalist Eastern European nations dismantled childcare networks and employment guarantees. Female poverty soared 50% in some countries. Women lost 12 million jobs in Russia alone. Political representation plummeted from near parity to single digits. This massive social experiment revealed exactly what happens when markets replace social support systems. My friend Lisa quit her career to raise children. Years later, she begged her husband for credit card access. Her unpaid labor, raising children, managing a household, left her with no wages, no work experience, no social security credits, healthcare only through her husband's employer. Her vulnerability wasn't personal failure, but structural design. Margaret Atwood captured this in The Handmaid's Tale. Gilead doesn't begin with violence. It starts by firing women and transferring their bank accounts to male relatives. Economic dependence precedes every other form of control. The family wage concept treated women's earnings as pocket money, regardless of their responsibilities. This fiction persists. We pay premiums for male waiters, offer male authors higher advances for identical work, and rate online courses higher when we believe the professor is male. Socialist countries countered this through guaranteed employment. By 1975, women comprised nearly half the Soviet workforce versus just over a third in North America. Today, Nordic countries lead in both gender equality and public employment, with women comprising 70% of public sector workers. As automation threatens jobs, we need new approaches: job guarantees, universal basic income, policies preventing women from becoming economically invisible. When Jake's talented employee became pregnant, she quit 6 months after returning from maternity leave. Jake's response, "I'll never hire another woman. I can be certain that a man won't have a baby." This is statistical discrimination. Employers judging individuals by demographic averages. Women face a biology tax, paid less because they might leave for children, then leaving because they're paid less, a self-fulfilling prophecy. Ursula Le Guin's The Left Hand of Darkness imagines hermaphroditic beings who randomly become male or female during reproduction. Everyone can father and bear children, making sex discrimination impossible. Everyone needs collective child-rearing support. Socialists understood gender equity requires such systems. In 1897, German feminist Lily Braun proposed maternity insurance, arguing society should share childbearing costs since it benefits from future workers. Scandinavian social democracies proved this works. East Germany provided special university housing for student mothers, subsidized child expenses, and universal childcare. By 1989, 34% of births occurred outside marriage without causing poverty. West Germany legally required women's jobs not interfere with household duties until 1977. After 1989, post-communist governments pursued refamilization, defunding childcare while extending poorly paid parental leaves without job protection. America nearly achieved universal childcare in 1971 with bipartisan support, but Nixon vetoed it, citing family-weakening implications, revealing conservative fear of women's economic independence. Sexual economics theory frames heterosexual interactions as marketplaces where women sell sex and men buy it with resources, with women controlling this commodity through weaker sex drives. The theory claims women's economic independence lowers sex's price. When women have resources, they needn't exchange sex for commitment through marriage. This framework inadvertently validates socialist critiques by revealing how market logic commodifies intimacy. In egalitarian societies, women's sexuality would cease being transactional, echoing Marx and Engels' observation that capitalism has resolved personal worth into exchange value. After the 1917 revolution, Kollontai dismantled traditional marriage through civil ceremonies, liberalized divorce, legalized abortion, and decriminalized homosexuality. However, Stalin's reversal demonstrated how economic systems directly shape intimate relationships. Russian sociologists tracked evolving sexual scripts through Soviet and post-Soviet interviews. After Stalin, economic independence reduced sexuality's exchange value, enabling romantic scripts. Post-USSR collapse brought hedonistic and instrumental scripts, manifested in sex work and strategic marriages. Divided Germany created a natural experiment contrasting equality versus traditional roles. Two-thirds of young East German women achieved orgasm almost always, with 75% satisfied after sex versus 46% of West Germans. Throughout the 1990s, Easterners insisted East German sex had been more genuine. Recent American studies confirm couples sharing domestic duties equally enjoy more frequent, satisfying sex. Political systems that seem permanent can collapse suddenly. In 1989, I left college believing nuclear war was imminent. 2 months later, the Berlin Wall fell. People who'd committed suicide days earlier couldn't imagine their world changing. Women stand to lose most in coming political struggles. The hashtag repeal the 19th trend emerged after maps showed Trump would win with only male voters, Clinton with only female voters. Research shows women's suffrage correlates with government spending growth. Women vote for progressive taxation and social programs benefiting them economically. Both government and markets are neutral tools. Currently, markets serve the super rich who use wealth to influence government, creating cycles where unregulated markets erode democratic power. Program cuts force women to shoulder more unpaid care work, diminishing autonomy and trapping them in unhealthy relationships. Beyond voting, we need political education and collective action for expanded public employment, subsidized childcare, and universal healthcare. We must reclaim emotional energy from capitalism, establishing effective sovereignty by refusing to let relationships become economic transactions. When women have economic independence, when care work is valued, when survival doesn't depend on finding a partner with resources, relationships transform into spaces of genuine connection rather than economic necessity. In a world commodifying everything from attention to affection, the most radical act might be refusing to price intimacy.